Well, South Africa is going through a pretty turbulent period right now, and who better to guide us through this than R.W. Johnson, our favorite columnist. We'll also be talking to Mr. Johnson today about Donald Trump, a magnificent column that he wrote, which is on BizNews Premium, all about Trump and the consequences of a crazy guy like that in the White House. Mr. Johnson, good to be talking with you as always. The piece that you wrote last week, where you had a look at the perhaps the backstory to the situation where South Africa's budget, national budget, was cancelled. It really gave insights to those of us who are trying to make sense out of a terribly confusing situation. I was talking earlier this morning to Rob Hersov about, as a young journalist, seeing Owen Horwood presenting a budget in Parliament. And right back there, all those decades ago, the budget day has always been a particularly special day and a very well-managed one. And this time round, it was all cancelled, which, as you wrote in your column, tells us a heck of a lot of what's actually going on in South Africa.
Well, personally, I wasn't that bothered by the cancellation and the kerfuffle over that, because that seemed to me fairly small change, really, of coalition politics. But I'm more interested in the fact that, you know, we've reached a point where we have these three alternatives of tax increases, spending cuts, or going further into debt. And for the last decade and more, the ANC has tended to go for tax increases and for more debt. I was personally rather pleased that the option of spending cuts has at last been brought to the fore, because it really could have happened before. But I think that the point to realize is that to make cuts, almost inevitably, given the way that the ANC runs the state as a sort of cadre deployment agency, it's very difficult for them to cut spending without damaging their own patronage networks. And that's, I think, why they are so reluctant to do it. To take an obvious example, it's still a proud boast that South Africa has a second only to the United States number of embassies and consulates around the world. Now, this is a quite ridiculous and fantastic situation. It would be no harm to anybody to close at least half of them. I mean, for a country of this size, that would be plenty. But as you know, this is really outdoor relief for superannuated ANC people. They're put out to grass in very nice ambassadorial jobs, which they don't really do very seriously, in nice places with lots of perks and so forth. And that's really what's going on. And so if you want to make a cut of e.g. half in that, then you've got a lot of very upset and angry old ANC notables on your hands. And that's not what the ANC likes to have. But you could multiply that many times over by looking through other areas of state expenditure. It's been pointed out, I think it was Tim Cohen who pointed out, there are 148 state agencies, and that many of them have got heads earning 4, 5, 6 million rand a year for not any clear gain to the public benefit at all. And again, these are simply patronage posts. And truthfully, it's high time that we should have had spending cuts on. I mean, there are lots of areas of life where I see this morning that the Institute for Economic Justice, which is, of course, pushing a wealth tax, I do hope that the DA will put its foot down and say, look, we are already far too highly taxed, and this will do absolutely nothing for growth, and this is nonsense. And anyway, the IEJ is simply another wing of the ANC, basically. So why not talk to the, to the chief people in charge rather than them? But I noticed that they said that spending cuts will invariably hit the poor. Well, this is nonsense, of course. The spending cuts, which I've just been talking about, wouldn't affect the poor at all. In fact, they would be rather good for a lot of poor people because you could make corresponding changes elsewhere for their benefit. So, I mean, I don't think one should listen to that sort of nonsense.
It's also the ANC's favorite children, as you term them, those 1.3 million public servants. They've had a wonderful ride since democracy came into South Africa.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a curious situation where we all saw this negotiation going on, reaching 4, 4.5, 5, 5.5%, and a nice amicable agreement. And, you know, that was way over what had been budgeted for. It was an inflation plus settlement for already well-paid people, many of them overpaid. And nobody said anything, but that was a choice which was being made to go deep into the red for no very good reason, really. If you had simply made it an inflation-linked settlement, that would have been quite generous enough. And you could have saved an enormous amount. But, of course, they are, because they're all unionized and this is the heart of COSATU in these days, this is a politically very sensitive group.
We did see the latest polls coming from the Social Research Foundation, who've been pretty good at their polling ahead of the May election last year, putting the ANC at just 32% of committed voters, down from 46% in September. So is it a case of people kind of finally waking up to the reality that you can't keep going on the same path, you can't allow this to continue because you're just going to have greater unemployment, less jobs, more contraction of GDP per capita and so on? Or is there something more behind this?
No, I think that's, look, I think what the poll shows is tremendous fluidity and a lot of people not sure what to do and what to say and what to think. And that's why you now have quite large swings. Because as you say, the previous poll showed the ANC having gone up from 40 to 46 and now way down to 32. Or potentially, if they take away Ramaphosa as leader, even further down. I don't know if you noticed that. But
21%, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's very striking. What that means is that neither Mashatile nor Mbalula nor Lesufi or any of the other pretenders has got any serious following at all, and that they all spell disaster as things stand. Look, I think that people do understand, and that there's quite a lot of blame shifting going on. I was quite amused last week. I have an old friend who was quite a senior person in Mkhonto, and he told me that he'd been told by Ronnie Casrils that where everything had gone wrong was that they should have continued the RDP, and if it was the introduction of gear that had put everything on a wrong path, and that's why we are where we are today. And it was all going back to that, you see. And I said to him, you know, this is complete nonsense. I think he half wanted to believe it because he's always sort of looking for, you know, simple explanations. And I just said, look, you know, RDP was a huge unbudgeted wish list. And Becky could see quite correctly, as could Manuel, that if you went ahead with more and more spending, that you were going to end up with a fiscal crisis quite quickly. And that there were plenty of people in the market saying the ANC will muck up things very quickly, and they didn't want to fulfill that prediction. And so they did what they did. And in fact, as we know, in the early 2000s, there was a very nice period of high commodity prices and rapid growth. So in fact, they did get their reward for the changes they made. But as I say, I think everyone now recognizes that the situation we're in is pretty awful and that things are not working anywhere. And therefore, people are looking around to lay the blame. And the ANC is desperately trying to say it's all the fault of apartheid and colonialism, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, there will be other attempts to do this. But I don't think it washes. I think that that explanation has been overdone long ago. And that, as I say, opinion is now very, very fluid because the attachment to the ANC was the basic, really strong backbone of South African politics for three decades, and it's gone, it's broken. And what was interesting about the poll was that both MK and EFF were down. So, you know, and although the DA was up slightly, it wasn't anything like enough to explain the fall in the ANC vote. So where are all those votes going? It would appear that they're going nowhere, really, that the into the don't knows, or possibly for some of the smaller parties. I haven't seen the detail of the poll, but people don't know what to say and what to do, I think.
But at least they know that they don't know, which I guess is a big change from where we were in the past, where they continue to vote blindly. But I guess the big question now is, we can see this downward trajectory for the country. Whatever comes in the budget on the 12th will be interesting, but we do have the problems that you've articulated. Is there some kind of a backstop that the ANC are looking at? Because surely they must know that they're going to need more money from someone. The international bankers are not going to be that keen to be coughing up. Is it the IMF? And indeed, would the IMF be a likely lender of last resort?
Well, they have just taken a low-interest loan, I think 1%, from the IMF for about $4 billion, which, you know, is very nice, cheap money. Of course, what I think they're very scared of, and quite rightly from their point of view, is that if the debt keeps on creeping up, that they will be forced sooner or later to go to the IMF for a bailout, and that the price of that would be the cancellation of most of the ANC's economic policies and effectively the end of the NDR and all the hopes placed upon it. So they don't want that to happen, but it is there as the sort of, well, the IMF is the lender of last resort, and that says it pretty well. But as I pointed out in the piece I wrote for you, that even that cannot now be taken for granted, because the way the IMF works is that I think it's something like, I'm trying to remember, I think you need 85% agreement before you make any dispositions of money. And the US has, I think, 17% of the shares. So they, in effect, have a veto. And there's nothing to stop Trump simply saying, well, no more loans to South Africa, please, including not a bailout. So even the bailout possibility is no longer secure. You know, that means that we're in a very, very vulnerable situation. And I do think, I come back to this, that really we have to make spending cuts. There's really no alternative. We cannot keep increasing the debt, and we are already far too highly taxed, and that is in itself one of the things that is preventing us from growing any faster. So spending cuts are the only possible way.
And what percentage would you put to the chance of that happening, given everything we hear about having a president who doesn't, or who lacks a backbone? Because spending cuts in the public sector is going to be, it's going to require a lot of backbone.
Well, it depends on whether the DA's got the backbone for a start. They've said no tax increases. If they put their foot down, then they can win that one. And I hope that they don't muff it, because really, I think that the country needs them to keep that foot down and not put up with any nonsense. But I think they must come forward with positive suggestions. And, you know, of course, what I said is true in general about the patronage networks, but of course, even so, there will be some areas which hurt the ANC more than others. So one could at least select some areas which do them less harm than others might. But I agree that Ramaphosa is not going to want to have his fingerprints on this. And clearly Gorongwana has gone the other way. But he's going to have to come back. If the DAs stick to their guns, I don't see how he can avoid it.
It's going to be a really interesting budget. But you did mention Donald Trump. And we saw yesterday that Donald Trump has now gone against, in the most vocal manner possible, the Ukraine and its part in the whole war, supporting Putin, telling the United Nations that, well, vetoing the United Nations censure, further censure of Russia. He's an interesting character, and the focus of your column that we've published this morning on BizNews, which for the first time opened my eyes. The consequences of a Trump presidency, though, is what really caught my attention, and they're not good.
Well, there will be some things which all of us will actually quite enjoy, I guess. You know how it is. He's such a scattergun, firing off in all directions. There will be some changes that he makes that one can applaud. But, look, I mean, frankly, I think he's a big child, and that I was quite struck that the French and British, with both their leaders going to Washington this week, there was a lot of discussion in both places about so-called toddler management, how to manage Trump because of his essentially childish reactions and so forth. And people even calculating his sugar levels, saying that, you know, these strongly affect his ability, his willingness to go, to lose his temper and make wild statements and go off at tangents and so on. Look, I think that he is, you know, he's a very ignorant man. He doesn't read. He gets most of his news from Fox News, which is not a very good source. And, you know, he's a very short attention span. He, in his first presidency, he wouldn't even read the intelligence briefings, which a president gets every morning. It was too much reading for him. You know, so, I mean, it's really off the top of his head, a lot of this stuff. And I can remember one of my old pupils is a pollster in America, who was Clinton's pollster, actually. And when Trump was first running, and he was in 2016, I spoke to him on the phone. I said, he's saying some amazing things. Who's advising him? And I remember my friend just laughed and said, nobody. It's all him. It's all off the top of his head, you know. And of course, that's true and become more visibly so. So it's very unpredictable. I mean, for example, the stuff about Greenland and Canada becoming 51st state and so forth. I'm sure he's read about or been told about previous presidents who made the Louisiana Purchase or who bought Alaska from the Russians or whatever. And now this later was said to be a wonderful coup and so forth. And I think he's got in his head that this would cement his place in history and so forth. But even that is so incredibly ignorant. I mean, if you take Canada for an example, Canada is far, far bigger than America. It couldn't possibly be one state. If you really did amalgamate the two, Canada would have to be at least five or six states. And I can tell you, they would all vote Democrat, and you would have a permanent Democrat majority as a result, because they all have, at the moment, public medical programs, which they are very attached to, and they wouldn't have in America. I mean, they are natural Democrats, if you know what I mean. And they don't like guns, and, you know, they have many, many differences in the way they behave. And he obviously hasn't thought about any of that. You know, It's just off the top of his head.
But South Africa's in the crosshairs right now. How should Pretoria be playing Donald Trump? You mentioned the toddler, how to handle the toddler. If one were to take that seriously, how do you deal with him?
Well, that's all very well going into this handling the toddler stuff, but that's if you're in the situation, as Britain and France are, that their leaders are going to be meeting and talking with him and having an opportunity to put their point of view in person. You could see Macron doing it with great charm yesterday, and I'm sure Starmer will try to do the same. But South Africa's not going to be in that position. They're not going to get to see Trump. You can be sure of that. And I very much doubt that they'll get to see Rubio. And, you know, they basically will get the brush off, I think, for as things stand. Look, I think the only way in which South Africa could now really make any dent in the impression they've created would be to backpedal on some of the things they've done. To drop the case against Israel, for example, something dramatic like that, where they actually do something. I mean, you know, that would please Trump. He would feel that he'd got somewhere and that they'd really done something. And you might then be able to pick up some sort of relationship. But you have to make some concession. It's simply say, we will continue with everything we're doing. And we'll just explain it to you better. I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it at all. It's just, that will just get the brush off. I'm afraid you have to make concession.
Isn't there a danger here that South Africa would also act like toddlers and double down and continue with what are clearly very poor, very bad policies that have caused so much trouble? Just because you got Donald Trump on the other side of the water acting like a schoolyard bully.
Yeah, that looks like what will happen at the moment. But I must say, I think it's very, very ill-considered. Look, when you think of all the ways in which we have gone out of our way to provoke the Americans, I mean, go back to the Lady R. Now, Brigati, who was the ambassador at the time, said he would bet his life on the fact that they had been an arms shipment. Now, look, he wasn't going to spell it out any more than that, but what that clearly means is that there were CIA people probably in Simonstown watching what was being loaded and unloaded, and that the Americans, who certainly have intelligence people within the country, will have a sharp eye on that, and I'm quite certain that they are well able to intercept all our electronic communications, and that they will know extremely well what is going on. You have to just take that on board and realize that that's what you're dealing with here. That, you know, and I mean, the way that we dealt with that, you know, getting a retired judge to judge upon it, keeping the judgment secret so that Ramaphosa announces everything's all right, but I can't tell you what he said. That was accepted. I mean, that's childish stuff. You can't get away with that, you know. And I think that they don't realize the game that they've been playing in, and that it they're way out of their depth, frankly. But as you say, they look like they want to continue. I just hope that there's somebody somewhere in Durko, in the Foreign Affairs Ministry, who is at least putting some of these questions to them.
The other danger, I guess, is that China will be ready to swoop and buy South Africa for a bargain price. That's been projected as a possible outcome of all of this.
Well, one always hears that, but you know, the Chinese haven't really attempted anything like that. And I think that they are well aware that South Africa is extremely badly run and badly managed, and that I don't think they would want to get in here too deep unless they were going to, you know, if they could do a deal whereby they end up owning Durban or, you know, a major port on the Indian Ocean, they might be in it for that. But there's no sign of them rushing here with lots of money to bail out this government.
I'd love to get your thoughts as we close off on Professor Irina Filatova's piece, where she says that Donald Trump has acquired the ANC's best friend in Vladimir Putin. What are the consequences of that, the way you see it?
Well, we don't know yet. I gather that the Russians, when they met in Saudi Arabia, they brought with them a whole menu of investment opportunities for Trump. They know that he responds to that sort of thing. So there could be link-ups of that sort in the offing. I don't know. As Irina pointed out in that article, this is an awkward thing for ANC true believers, because much as they hate Trump, they love Putin. But if they're going to end up on the same side, then what do they make of that? You know, hard to say. But we don't know yet. Look, it's all in flux at the moment. And quite clearly, the Europeans are going to try hard to pull things their way, and they may get somewhere. I mean, the most interesting thing at the moment is the way that the Russians are saying, no way will they accept European peacekeepers in Ukraine. But Trump is saying he'd be quite happy with that. So, you know, there is a major contradiction between the two, which as yet hasn't come to fruition, but looks like it could.
The 550 people who will be looking forward to your talk at the BizNews conference in 3 weeks' time, but directly straight after you closing the conference will be Clem Sunter, and he always talks about flags and the flags we should be looking at. If we have a look at the conversation we've had today and the flags we need to be paying attention to for South Africa in the weeks and months ahead, what would they be?
Well, I don't tend to think in terms of flags in the same way. When you say flags, you mean indicators for the future?
Yeah, those issues that we can pay attention to, apply our minds to, and follow, because the news cycle is so rapid nowadays and there's so much to look for. What are the key issues that we should be looking at?
Well, I think that, as I said, well, I think we agreed that this budget choice, whether they really do go for spending cuts or not, that's certainly one. And secondly, whether or not what they do in the budget, whether the DA can come up with something which is really growth enhancing as well. Because, of course, none of the ANC, I mean, if you look at what they're spending the money on, none of it is helping growth. Simply giving civil servants more pay, it's just more consumption, that's all. They don't seem to be bothered about growth at all. But I think if the DA is sensible, they will, again, be very firm in demanding this, because otherwise they're going to end up being responsible for another no-growth government and higher unemployment and all that means, which is not going to do them any good at all. Apart from that, well, personally, I don't have any hopes that anything much will come out of this G20 stuff. And it's been rather overshadowed by the American, their effective boycott. But I do think that, I'm disappointed so far with Ronald Lamola, who is clearly an able and intelligent man. But thus far as foreign policy goes, he's simply taken the script he was given and he keeps reading it out. And he hasn't made any changes or anything. But, that I would hope that will happen because it really needs to.
And Donald Trump?
Sorry?
Trump in South Africa?
Well, things will happen with Trump, but we never know. I mean, you can go off pop in so many different directions. But I suppose the Starlink thing is important. Are we really going to turn our backs on that? It sounds like Ramaphosa was deciding that, but it's a completely crazy decision, if so. I wonder whether that won't be revisited. But I haven't thought ahead about this question at all, so I have to stop there, I think.
Well, lots to reflect on from what you have thought ahead about. Bill Johnson, the favorite columnist on BizNews, and he was talking about former pupils of his at Oxford University, where he was for 26 years. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.